Welcome back, podcast listeners. This is Dr. Raywat Deonandan, global health epidemiologist once again, and this episode is another installment from a few of my undergraduate students. This was recorded in October of 2015, and you're about to hear a presentation by Michelle Brazeau, Jessica Colborne, and Fallon Melville, who will be analyzing a study called Group Support Psychotherapy for Depression Treatment in People with HIV/AIDS in Northern Uganda, which you can read on The Lancet. There's a link in the website at deonandan.com. Click on podcast, select the Deonandia podcast, and scroll to this episode. So here are Jessica, Michelle, and Fallon.
Hi, my name is Jessica, and I'm here with my classmates Fallon.
Hi.
And Michelle.
Hi, and in today's podcast, we will be discussing the article entitled Group Support Psychotherapy for Depression Treatment in People with HIV and AIDS in Northern Uganda, a single-center randomized control trial by Nakimuli Mupungu and Associates. We accessed this article through the University of Ottawa databases, and this article was published in the Lancet Journal under the Global Health section.
In this study, the authors chose to perform an open-label randomized control trial, so neither the researchers nor participants were blinded. The study was conducted in Kitgum Town in northern Uganda and included men and women over the age of 19 that are HIV positive and met the criteria for major depression. In total, 109 participants were randomly assigned to one of two programs. The first program was a group support psychotherapy, and the second program was group HIV education. The sessions were conducted once a week for 8 weeks, and each session lasted 2 to 3 hours. The groups for the programs were gender-specific to ensure feelings of safety and respect. According to a study conducted by Ange and Yao in 2010, most females prefer a female counselor and feel significantly more safe when surrounded by female participants. According to the World Health Organization, women and men experience depression differently. Depression is the leading cause of disease burden for women in low- to middle-income countries, as well as high-income countries. Therefore, this division was beneficial to the study.
The participants were assessed 3 different times, once at baseline, once immediately after the program intervention, and the third time was 6 months after the intervention. Two primary outcomes were measured and 2 secondary outcomes. The primary outcomes were depressive symptom scores and functional scores, and the secondary outcomes were perceived social support and self-esteem.
Now, this study produced predictable results. Immediately following the intervention, both groups experienced a similar reduction in depression, reflected by a similar decrease in mean depression scores and increase in mean functional scores for both the group support psychotherapy and group HIV education programs. At the 6-month follow-up assessment, group support psychotherapy proved to be more effective for the long-term treatment of depression. Compared to group HIV education, group support psychotherapy resulted in lower mean depression scores and higher mean functional scores, as well as increased self-esteem and social support markers. Group support psychotherapy provides coping skills, opportunity to generate income, and a social support system. Existing educational interventions could be improved by adding an additional group support psychotherapy component to provide intervention to as many individuals as possible.
According to AVERT, an international HIV and AIDS charity, 69% of all people living with HIV are residing in sub-Saharan Africa. Jessica, do you think that the needs of the population are being addressed through this intervention study?
Well, Fallon, if we're looking strictly at the needs of the HIV-positive population in Uganda with major depression, then yes, I believe their mental health needs are being addressed. According to a report by Shippey and Associates in 2011, depression increases the incidence of social, physical, cognitive, work, and household limitations by 2 to 6 times when compared to those without depression. This study specifically addresses the issues around high depression rates and the desperate need for mental health services in low to middle income countries and attempt to reduce these limitations. By looking at the effects of introducing group support psychotherapy as a treatment for depression, we can see if and how this treatment will decrease the limitations that are associated with depression, further providing implications to treat mental illness, specifically in low to middle income countries.
I agree with your points, Jessica, that the needs of the study population are being met. However, looking at the duration of the study, based on your points, many of the needs being addressed are only short-term. The study demonstrates the effectiveness of group support psychotherapy to reduce depression by providing coping skills and support. By providing this support system, it further reduces the limitations caused by depression. However, the long-term effects are yet to be addressed. That being said, if resources were allocated to continue such a program, I think long-term needs have the potential to be met.
I agree with both of you. This study addresses the short-term needs of the population and provides a platform for the development of long-term programs. However, the interventions delivered by diploma or degree-level mental health professionals are not sustainable. The scarce availability of these health professionals in low-income regions restrict the long-term accessibility of depression interventions. The healthcare system is understaffed in Uganda. There is only one physician for every 10,000 people. Uganda needs to improve their healthcare system to assist the many individuals who are affected by HIV and associated depression. According to a 2014 study written by Arseniou, depression is the most common mental illness associated with HIV infection, with 1 in 5 individuals with HIV suffering from clinical depression. Jess, did you find any other negative qualities in the study?
Yes, overall the study's findings are important. However, some of the methods can be critiqued. The first is the recruitment process. It was somewhat biased and could have been performed in a more effective manner. In the study, participants were selected from an urban HIV care center in Kickham Town, but the exclusion criteria states that participants must live or work within a distance of 15 kilometers of Kickham Town. This criteria leads to neglecting rural populations. As well, the participants were recruited strictly by word of mouth, which isn't the most effective way in attaining a wide range of participants and limits the sample population. However, I can understand that this may have been the most acceptable method in this context because other media sources aren't as widely available in this area. However, looking again at the inclusion and exclusion criteria, there is a positive aspect. The study did not exclude those who were addicted to alcohol. The authors state this as a strength because alcohol addicts are often omitted from randomized control trials, which eliminates a significant group of depressed individuals who are negatively coping by abusing alcohol.
I also noted that the measures of depression used in the study were somewhat inapplicable to the Ugandan population. The MINI, which stands for the MINI International Neuropsychiatric Interview, was used as a diagnostic tool. However, not all the categories of the MINI have been adopted to meet local standards. The depression diagnostic section of the MINI was the only one to be translated into the Luganda language. Because of this limitation, the accuracy of diagnosis can be questioned.
I also found it interesting that the authors referenced their previous studies as evidence to support their current arguments. Usually, referencing one's own work introduces a source of bias into the study.
Another flaw of this study is the differences between the two interventions being compared. The group support psychotherapy program took the form of a therapy session with confidence-building aspects, open discussion, and income-generating skills. Whereas the group HIV education program took the form of an information session describing many poor outcomes of being HIV positive. The two programs were also developed in different contexts. The development of the group support psychotherapy involved discussions with community members to identify community-based perceptions regarding depression. These discussions also determined the most culturally acceptable components of group support psychotherapy, resulting in a culturally sensitive and acceptable program. Whereas the group HIV education program was developed for international change in Tanzania. Although the program is reliable, it is not as culturally sensitive as the group support psychotherapy program.
To add to the positive aspects of the study, there were 3 small details that I found beneficial to increase the strength of the study. Firstly, randomization was done thoroughly. There was no forms of bias involved in their methods, as it was all done in a completely randomized format. Secondly, the study was based on the principles of 3 well-known and reliable theories: the cognitive behavioral theory, this social learning theory, and this sustainable livelihood framework. Lastly, the funding of the study displayed no sources of bias. The Grand Challenges of Canada provided the funding, and they had no role in the study design, data collection, data analysis, data interpretation, or writing of the report. Michelle, why do you think it is important that the study focused on depression?
Well, HIV and depression are both devastating diseases worldwide on both individual and societal levels. The effects of depression limit activities of daily living and reduce support systems. Individuals with depression may isolate themselves, in turn reducing support systems from family and their community. Depression affects every aspect of life, from the microsystem to the macrosystem, and it is important to address this mental illness.
I agree with you, Michelle. Depression is such an important topic because it represents a large proportion of the world's burden of disease. According to the World Health Organization, depression is currently ranked as the third leading cause of the global burden of disease. It will move into first place by 2030. In 2012 alone, depression was estimated to affect 350 million people worldwide. As well, the World Health Organization states that depression is the leading cause of disability as measured by years lived with disability. The burden of disease in Uganda is predominantly communicable diseases, although there is a growing burden of non-communicable diseases, including mental health disorders. In a global context, we're shifting away from a focus on mortality rates and rather focusing on the burden from disease, as more people are suffering from chronic rather than infectious diseases. Oftentimes in low-income countries, the importance of mental illness is overlooked. However, we are now realizing how much of a problem this really is.
It truly is a problem. Such high prevalence of this debilitating mental illness has far-reaching effects on social, economical, biological, geographical, and political perspectives.
The implications of depression gravely affect the social aspects of life. Depression often acts as a cascade effect, first emotionally immobilizing the individual themselves, and then causing emotional distress to their friends and family. Those who are depressed have tendencies to isolate themselves from the community, which in turn only hinders their potential to receive support. The burden of depression is not only felt by the individual, but everyone who is connected to them. Globally, there is also a huge social stigma related to mental health. Individuals suffering from depression will be reluctant to speak out and get help.
From an economic perspective, the self-isolation that Fallon just mentioned there prevents the individual from being a productive and active member in society. In Shippey's 2014 study, it was found that those who continue to work after being diagnosed with depression report a much lower work productivity level and therefore don't contribute to the same degree as those who are not diagnosed. Having such a high proportion of individuals affected by the depression decreases the population of eligible workers, which can have an effect on the overall economic system of society. Global institutions such as PEPFAR, Clinton Foundation, and the Global Fund are financially supporting low-income countries to fight HIV and AIDS. However, these global institutions should be allocating some of these funds specifically to mental health services to reduce the burden of depression.
From a political perspective, Uganda has been afflicted by civil wars for decades, which could direct the focus away from health problems such as mental illness. Though issues surrounding the health and mental well-being of the HIV-positive population are recognized by Uganda, they are barely addressed. On another note, the World Health Organization partnered with Uganda to develop a country cooperation strategic agenda. Though healthcare was addressed, mental health was not mentioned in this report. It is necessary for Uganda to improve their policies addressing HIV and mental health. According to Okeke, proactive government leadership, effective grassroots prevention campaigns, and an open approach to managing the epidemic will help reduce the stigma associated with HIV and thus reduce depression.
From a biological standpoint, a positive correlation between HIV and depression has been established. In a 2012 study by Schulster, it was found that untreated cases of depression result in decreased CD4 cell counts. Additionally, it is known that as HIV progresses, it also decreases cell counts of CD4. The presence of both HIV and depression can have a synergistic effect on the degradation of CD4 cells, therefore making the individual
especially vulnerable to opportunistic infections and comorbidities. Patel et al. States these concerns are especially predominant in post-conflict settings where poverty, food insecurity, and poor access to psychological care are very common.
So looking back at depression management in a global context, obviously Uganda is not up to par with the high-income countries around the world. Uganda spends about 9.5% of their GDP on healthcare, but according to Jack and Associates, their budget for mental health is only roughly 0.5%. Meanwhile, in high-income countries, more than 5% of the healthcare budget is typically allocated to mental health needs.
This study shows promise in terms of addressing the issues of mental health in low-income countries. However, our research shows that a lot of work still remains to be done.
And that concludes our podcast. Thank you for listening.